is the Stargirl After Show with Sarah and Sean. Your post-show breakdown of DC Stargirl with Easter eggs, exclusive behind-the-scenes info, and cast and crew interviews.
This is our destiny.
I finally know who I really am.
I'm Stargirl.
This is the Stargirl After Show.
Hey, Stargirl fans, it's the time we've been waiting for and dreading, the finale of Season 2. Welcome to Stargirl After Show, sponsored as always by Stargirl.tv and DCTV.news, your best resources for news, media, and spoilers about Stargirl and other DC Comics properties. I'm Sean.
And I'm Sarah.
And here we are, at the end.
Oh, it was so good.
I want to say right at the top of the episode, we have an amazing interview with an amazing actor named Milo Stein, who we're going to start talking about here in a second because he's right at the top of the episode as young Bruce / Eclipso.
Yeah, so definitely stay tuned and listen to that. That kid, he's going places. If he wants to continue with acting, I think is going to win an Oscar.
100%. I mean, if he wants to go that route, which, you know, he probably does. Why not?
It seems like it.
Anyway, why don't you jump us into the episode?
All right, so we're jumping back in. Young Bruce is telling the Dr. Midnights that he wants everyone there.
The Dr. Midnights.
Yeah.
I think the correct phraseology is the Doctor's Midnight.
Yeah, I like Dr. Midnights more.
Like Attorneys General.
We learn that Eclipso has trapped Beth's parents at the American Dream, and they're kind of like stuck in this shadow world, Shadowland kind of area where Eclipso's Beth is yelling at them and it's just slowly kind of draining them. And there's nothing Beth can do.
So yeah, this is sort of the portent of what he wants to accomplish globally. Mm-hmm. He's brought part of the Shadow Realms into the real world, specifically James's office. Mm-hmm. And they're trapped in there with, as you said, the Shadow Realms Beth, telling them that they've ruined the family and she hates them. But this is what we learn very shortly, that Eclipso wants to do to the whole world is merge the Shadow Realms here so he can feed off everyone's desperation and become a god.
Mm-hmm. Then we go over and Jenny is waking up from a nightmare where she's seeing Eclipse Courtney. And, when Barbara checks on her and Jenny's like, we need to stop Courtney from going there. And Barbara's like, well, it's too late. They've already left. Wildcat, Courtney, Pat, and Shiv walking down the street. And I love the little line of, yeah, where's your big robot? And Pat's like, it's under repair, thanks to you. Oh, right. My bad.
Yeah. And a little bit of bickering between Cindy and Yolanda.
Yeah, that was great too.
And that's when we see our first rift open to the Shadow Realms, which I don't think we're really certain of what it is at first, but all becomes clear. And I love seeing Rick working on the hourglass and we see some like hidden tech in there.
And he's really struggling with it. And I like that there is like the hidden tech, that it's not like magic that makes it work kind of thing. I like that it's something that can be accomplished
100%
without knowing magic. Yeah. But yeah, he's struggling with that and, you know, gets one of his usual little Rick outbursts and throwing it around.
Yeah.
And then we have Mike and Jakeem, who is one of my new favorite duos on the team.
Yeah.
Or on the show. And we learned that once the Thunderbolt's back and Stripe is fixed, then they can come join the rest of the team. But Zeke finds out that, you know, Stripe can only be fixed with the engine from this one car, and that's really hard to find.
Car or even a plane or something. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I don't know about engines. Like, what Zeke said was the most gibberish thing to me on the entire season.
Yeah.
What I loved about this, though, is, you know, Zeke the whole season has been like, don't tell me, I don't want to know. But then he's finally like, what are you guys working on? Mm-hmm. And we don't know if Mike tells him.
Uh-uh.
Because it's sort of pushed in on Mike and he looked like he was getting ready to speak. But then later, Zeke doesn't seem like he's, I guess he doesn't get very riled.
Yeah.
So Mike could have told him the whole thing and he's just like, whatever. Gonna save the world, sure.
That's kind of how I took it. Cause like later when, you know, Thunderbolt shows up and he's just kind of taking it in and then giving Mike instructions when he's in the suit. But that's jumping ahead.
Yeah. Now our next scene, might be my favorite. Our sequence, can't even really call it a scene. The next sequence where we've got Ted Grant versus Yolanda. Wildcat versus Wildcat. Pat versus Stripesy. And Cindy versus Shiv.
Yes.
When I was watching this initially, when Ted Grant, who we have not seen fight before, when Ted Grant just like does a combo and punches Yolanda in the face, I like exclaimed in some way that I was unaware of. And my wife was like, are you okay? What's going on? Because I was like, oh, because it looked brutal.
I love just that whole old JSA fighting the new JSA kind of thing. And then young Cindy fighting older Cindy. Yeah. And then all the cuts in it. Just amazing.
And when Cindy says, like, I'm not afraid of you, what, no matter what you look like. And young Cindy is like, I don't know about that or whatever she says. Because it went out of my head the instant Cindy full on kicks her across the room.
Yep.
Because that, again, looked like a brutal kick. It didn't look like one of those stunt kicks where they pulled the girl across the room on wires. Like, it looked like Meg DeLacy got mad at a little girl and just went bananas on her.
Yeah, it really did.
And then she does a kip up. I don't know. There's something about a 10-year-old girl doing a kip up that looked really intimidating. yeah, all those fights were really great. I don't know. There's something about everyone being afraid of themselves in some way that Eclipso was playing on that I really liked. Even though with Yolanda, she wasn't afraid of herself. She was afraid of legacy, I guess, or living up to the legacy of Ted Grant.
Yeah.
Because he's really laying it on thick about like how you don't deserve this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only fight of the three where really you're seeing different fighting styles. Because she's very fluid and cat-like, and he's very just straightforward and brutal. And I loved seeing that counterpoint.
And he doesn't have the claws like she does, right?
Right. Now, okay. I feel like his costume maybe had those at one point, but he probably just didn't like them.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know where he got his costume. His Wikipedia entry says that his claws can cut through stuff, but he's just always got his bandage up fists.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe early in his superhero career, he had the claws and he used them. And then he just was like, you know what? The claws get in the way of punching. That's my headcanon.
I buy it.
I've actually given it thought. I'm not coming up with this right now. Like, I've put thought into this particular subject.
And while all those fights are going on, Courtney and Eclipso are kind of facing off, but it's more of young Bruce just kind of disappearing every time Courtney tries to get him.
Yeah, I think it was interesting that Courtney didn't have a doppelganger to fight. You know, she wasn't fighting another her or Starman, for example. And that might be because the reveal later on would be confusing.
I took it as Eclipso's plan for her was her to just see everyone else deteriorate. And just so she wasn't distracted by whatever she was dealing with, she was more impacted by what was going on with her friends and family.
That also makes sense. And then Cindy and Courtney double teaming Eclipso.
Oh, that was amazing.
They worked so well together. It sort of like makes you feel like sad that they're typically enemies.
Mm-hmm.
It was a ballet of violence.
It was beautiful. Luckily, Chuck kind of, you know, gets away and he's talking, gets Pat to realize, you know, this isn't really here. And then Beth goes to help Courtney to see where Eclipso actually is with the goggles, and so they're able to kind of fight back.
And then Courtney basically blasts Milo out of the episode, and we get big Eclipso from here on out.
Mm-hmm. And then over in the garage, Rick has had it. He can't fix the hourglass, and so he's leaving, and Mike's like, oh, did you fix it? And he's like, no, where are you going? Going to fight. And it's like that determination that Rick has.
Yeah, and my thought was sort of the same as Eclipso's thought when Rick first shows up at the fight, but we'll get there.
And then the realization that hit Mike, I thought this was a major moment of growth for him, that he's like, my dad knew I wouldn't be able to use Stripe tonight. Like, he knew that it wouldn't be fixed and I wouldn't be coming. And, you know, Jakeem is immediately like trying to comfort him, like, well, he just wants to keep you safe. And Mike's concern is not about being excluded. It's about his dad going in without backup and not being able to help him.
But also, as soon as he has the realization that his dad knew he was never going to go down there, my thought was, well, yeah, of course. Because does it seem in character for Pat to tell Mike, as soon as that's done, you come and join this fight against this monster?
Yeah, take control of this robot that you don't know how to use.
When Jakeem calls him a demon and Mike corrects him and says he's a monster, I really think that Jakeem was closer. I mean, he possesses people.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely ticks more demon boxes than monster boxes.
I think so, too.
I did love Jakeem saying, like, I fight monsters in video games when you get a bunch of extra lives, and I use them. All of them.
I love that line.
I really do love Alcoya's portrayal here. And I like that, you know, Jakeem in the comics is not like a nerdy kid like that so much. And I really like that take on it.
Yeah, I haven't read any of him in the comics, but I am loving his character. And I mean, I'm assuming he's going to be around in season three, but I really hope that he will be.
I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be.
And then we got Thunderbolt comes back with lots of different kinds of Chinese food. And then Mike tries to explain that to him and to Zeke. And Zeke's just like, nope, nope, just let me take it in.
Yeah, I love the shot where it's like a profile of Mike with Zeke's hand in his face. And he's just sort of leaning back from it like,
Yep.
I keep loving Zeke more and more.
Yep.
I will say, when the Thunderbolt comes back with all the Chinese food, my friend Courtney, who works in props, had to go and buy so many ducks.
Oh, really?
From, like, we have a Chinatown in Atlanta. It's not Chinatown like you think of a Chinatown. It's just like a shopping plaza, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
These ducks that the Thunderbolt were carrying were VFX. But she had to go buy a bunch of ducks for when Zeke's eating his Chinese food. There's like Chinese food all around him that the Thunderbolt had brought. So she had to go buy real ducks for that.
Oh, okay.
So many of them.
That's a lot of ducks.
Yeah.
We get Eclipso doing his creepy scurrying that he did in episode 6. And he climbs to the top of those buildings and, you know, announces that he's on the edge of victory. When all of a sudden, like, Cucaracha starts playing and he gets wiped off the building, and we see Mike is in Stripe and he starts dabbing, and I loved it.
And then the Futurama reference, instead of saying kiss my shiny metal ass, he said kiss my giant metal ass.
Oh, okay.
That's a Bender catchphrase.
Nice, nice.
And I love that Zeke put the La Cucaracha horn into Stripe.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because that doesn't seem like a Pat kind of thing.
No, it's just so dumb.
Mm-hmm.
It's so dumb and I love it.
Yeah, and then we get Zeke eating all the Chinese food and telling Mike, oh yeah, hit the yellow button, you know, get that guy with the saw, and then using the flamethrower and all that.
Dude, Eclipso getting chainsawed in the face was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that.
Yes.
And when I watched the episode for the second time with my wife, she loved it too. Like, she doesn't normally like get into stuff. She was like, yeah.
I mean, if anyone deserves a chainsaw to the face, I think it's Eclipso.
And then he takes out Stripe using the Thunderbolt by throwing the Thunderbolt at Stripe and shorting him out or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Rick shows up, like, what Eclipso says here is what I thought when he was leaving the pit stop. Was like, did you come here to die? You have no super strength. Because I don't know how I forgot about this line from the script. But when he says, oh, I have super strength, and it lasts more than an hour. And then, wham! Grundy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the payoff for Grundy we were waiting for.
I don't know how I didn't see that coming, but I was so happy.
Right?
And then I was so sad, because Eclipso just blasts a hole right through him.
And again, you know, my wife, I love being able to watch the episodes with her, because I can get her, like, in the moment reaction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ask her for them. She just volunteers them. Yeah. But she's like, what? What? Is he really dead? And I was kind of like, I didn't say it out loud, but I, you know, my thought was, well, he was always dead.
Mm-hmm.
Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday, died on a Tuesday. That's like his whole thing.
Yeah.
So once Grundy gets taken out, and I love that he's sort of sliding down that little incline on the road a little bit, and then he stops him with his foot. That was such a nice touch.
I agree. And then I love that Rick rushes Eclipso with no powers, but you know, he just killed his friend, so he's going to go attack him. And it was the exact same as in the finale of the first season, where when Icicle breaks the goggles and Beth realizes that she loses Chuck, and so she just rushes him with no powers and just tries to attack him.
So what you're saying is that we have an Hour Knight connection without them even being on screen together.
Exactly.
All right, you're welcome, guys.
And then we do a quick little cutscene to Barb and Jenny are getting ready to leave the house, and there's a knock at the door or the doorbell, and Barb answers and says, "Oh my God, it's you." And that's all we get.
Who did you think it was?
I was thinking maybe the Crocs, but then watching it again, I was like, no, she wouldn't react that way.
Yeah, she would have been like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
But my wife also thought the Crocs. And then she goes, or Starman. Really early on in the episode, my wife was like, where's Starman? Which a lot of people have been like, where's Starman? Because we haven't seen him since the season premiere.
Mm-hmm.
As he's been looking for Pat across the country. Speaking of Pat, we go back to the fight where Eclipso is basically about to rip his arm completely off his body.
I hated this part.
Oh?
Pat doesn't deserve it. I hated like what was happening, not that I hated the show for doing it.
Well, you know, the thing about Eclipso is he's a bad guy and he's not known for doing things just because people deserve them.
I know, I know.
Oh, do you know what we forgot to mention? Bruce, at the top of the episode, saying to Dr. McKnighter, I hope you're still upset about what I did to your little girl. Like, dude, that's harsh.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was decades ago, but still very harsh, man. Eclipso basically gets Courtney to scream that she hates him.
Mm-hmm.
And I love his like vampire swoop over to her.
Yeah, that one thread of hatred is all he needed. And he possesses her and then grabs the staff and it turns purple.
Yeah, that I did not see coming.
I thought that looked awesome.
Yeah, that was interesting.
He's wielding power of darkness and light, and with control over both, he can merge the worlds together into one so he can feed and become a god. And then meanwhile, the Midnights are watching Beth's parents and the Shade shows up. The Shadowlands apparently helped to heal him because they were merged over here. So that's just the kick he needed to get back in action.
We find out that his death scene in the theater was just him being a drama queen.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the scene where Beth and Chuck are suiting up and her parents are like, what is this? Who's this guy?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a superhero. So am I. It's a long story.
Oh, I loved it. Because now she doesn't have to keep her parents in the dark, but she may regret that. It seems at the end of the episode. But and then just Chuck being like, you should be very, very proud of your daughter.
Yeah.
I thought that was wonderful.
Now, in the next scene, we get like some real interesting information regarding the cosmic staff. It's strange that Eclipso needs to tell us this. But it's a conduit of spiritual enlightenment, he says. The power of creation itself. So, I don't know, maybe it's harnessing the leftover energy from the Big Bang to power itself.
Oh, yeah.
Or, I don't know. It's always been a bit nebulous in the comics. It's just sort of like powered by starlight or cosmic energy.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the staff could be a lot more powerful than we've given it credit for.
Very excited to see where it's going to end up. And Eclipso saying only one can control it, as Yolanda and Cindy are both trying to attack and get the, you know, Cindy, of course, wanted to just kill Courtney, kill the host to defeat Eclipso. And Yolanda was like, no, absolutely not. We get the staff.
Yeah.
And I was actually very surprised that Cindy listened.
Yeah.
I also like the whole where she's healing and like cracking and Yolanda just looks at her and goes, ew.
Oh, yeah. And then Cindy's like, whatever.
Yeah.
Did you realize that Starman was going to come in and grab the staff?
I kind of thought that that might happen.
I feel like there was maybe just one too many mentions of only one.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the last mention, my wife goes, so now, of course, Starman shows up. I don't have a lot of criticisms for the show typically, but I feel like that one extra mention telegraphed that a little bit. But I mean, it was a telegraph of something half a second away, so it's not a big deal.
Right. And I think everyone was already expecting him to show up.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're kind of floating and he and Eclipse Courtney are both holding the staff and he's saying, you know, kid, I'm still catching up. But if the staff works for you, it chose you. And there's a reason for that.
I want to backtrack just for a second and say there's something extra creepy about Breck Eclipsed versus pretty much anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it is.
Well, she's just so good all the time. Like you don't see, she's such a ray of positivity.
So extra creepy. And I loved it so much. So Eclipso's telling her that she's all alone and nobody can help her and whatever he's saying. And then we get like a montage of all the love in her life, basically.
Mm-hmm, of her chosen family and her real family.
Yeah.
And we get Pat yelling out, you know, Courtney, just be yourself. You know, you can break this.
Which is like what his father used to say to him.
Mm-hmm.
You'll only be a disappointment to yourself if you don't be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, it was weird that Stripesy tried to take that out of context and use just the first half as like a demeaning thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how would he fall for that?
Yeah.
Losing your edge there, Eclipso.
He had a lot going on.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm making excuses for Eclipso.
Yeah, I mean, come on. What side are you on here?
I'm sorry. So Courtney kind of expels Eclipso from her body. So we got the adult Eclipso, or demon version Eclipso, and he starts getting hit by stuff, and we see that the Crocs have shown up.
The call that Cindy made in the previous episode was to Artemis, clearly. And she went and broke her parents out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
That's an accomplishment for a 15-year-old girl.
It is impressive. And I love, you know, Croc just going to Pat and be like, hey, what's up, buddy? Like, so excited to see his old friend.
Yeah, I love the Croc and Pat relationship so much.
Mm-hmm.
I love it as much as Croc loves it, which is a lot more than Pat loves it.
Yes.
I love that. That's a fun dynamic also, is that you have two people that are friends and one of them does not consider that to be the situation.
Mm-hmm. And then we get the Shade showing up. He's saying that Eclipso's weekend, anyone with the light, act quickly. And so we got Jenny with the ring and then Courtney and Sylvester both holding the staff. Jakeem wishes that the Thunderbolt would, you know, turn him into toast. Or I wish he was toast.
Yeah. When he's getting blasted by everybody, my wife goes, I'm sorry to keep talking about my wife's reactions, but I don't always get to watch the episodes with her prior to recording the podcast. But we did watch this together last night and she had a lot of good comments. But while, and I'd already seen it, so like I already knew everything. While everyone is blasting Eclipso, she says, I feel like the Thunderbolt would have just turned him into a piece of toast. And she was very excited when the slice of toast was revealed.
And I think the eclipsed burn part of the toast was just perfect.
Yeah.
I love that little touch.
Oh, that's a little burnt. Yeah, that's a little burnt.
So that's the end of Eclipso.
Yes. What if, though? Hold on. What if someone eats that toast?
I know. I was thinking that, too.
I mean, it's a good thing it's so burnt. It's very not appealing. But Rick did mention putting it somewhere safe. So I hope in the future that we see it like on display at like JSA HQ or something.
He's not like, oh, I'll get rid of this. I'll go feed it to the ducks. And then we have a bunch of Eclipse ducks around the park.
Yeah, because, you know, we have the superhero artifacts set up. But in the comics, heroes often have trophies from the villains they vanquished on display. You know, the Hall of Justice has a whole, I mean, it's all a bad idea because it's usually like very dangerous weapons and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, having that toast on display with like the wizard's wand or something, I don't know, that'd be fun.
That would be. We're over on the front porch talking about how, it, you know, now it really feels like summer. And I'm sure part of that was just like the attitude and atmosphere, but also the weather, because it had gotten ridiculously cold.
Yeah.
And we find out that Yolanda is joining the team, coming back for good. And I love Courtney's reaction. She's just so happy about it. And then Courtney and Pat are down in the basement, kind of discussing Starman. And Courtney's like, you know, you saw his body. You know, we thought he was dead. He's like, well, we thought that Dr. Midnighter was dead as well.
Yeah, they never saw his body, though.
Yeah. And then Courtney's worried with that, you know, do you think he's here to take the staff back? And Pat's just like, hey, hey, let's take a break. We just defeated Eclipso. Let's not worry about something else yet. And, you know, has the little, you know, power up talk there where he's like, you know, we defeated Eclipso because of you. She's like, no, we had help. I mean, we had Cindy Berman and we had the Crocs and we had the Shade. And he's like, but it was all you. And she said that all Eclipso did was made her believe in people even more, that yes, everyone has some evil, but they all have good as well.
And that is the most Courtney thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Sylvester says, basically.
Yeah, and that's why the staff chose you.
Which is weird, because Sylvester seems to absolutely not have that kind of attitude.
Yeah, I've been thinking that too.
But we don't know the origins of the staff, really. It could have been made for Sylvester,
mm-hmm.
and that could be why it works for him. That yeah. might not have been a chosen thing. That may have been a programming thing, or however it works. I still don't know if it's magic or technology, or a mix of the two, I guess, because we know it was invented. It's not some magical artifact,
mm-hmm.
but it could have been invented and imbued with magic.
Right. And they said that Ted Knight created it.
Yes.
Isn't that what we learned in the first episode?
Yeah. Okay. Which tracks with the comics, but the staff doesn't, A, it doesn't have that thing where it can only work for a certain person, I think, mm-hmm. in the comics. And B, it definitely doesn't have the whole like sentient thing going for it.
It's another character that likes to play with the dog.
Yeah. And you remember in season one, the staff took it upon itself to go attack Icicle
mm-hmm.
all by itself with no human intervention.
Yeah.
That is the thing that the staff would not do in the comics or could not do.
But Sylvester tells Courtney, he's like, hey, well, do you want to learn what the staff can really do? So she's all excited. And Pat's like, yeah, but after summer school, which was a very Pat thing to say.
And Sylvester, I think, is already giving Pat like doubts about having him around.
Yeah. Like,
superheroes don't need school.
And then Chuck is talking with Barbara about going to find his wife. And Beth is like, well, I already found her. She's in Melody Hills, Indiana. Beth also asks if he knew that she was pregnant at the time that he disappeared. And he did not. And so now he has a 10-year-old son.
Yeah.
And then we go over with Mike and Jakeem, and they're delivering their papers. Mike is revealing that he can now pilot Stripe, but, you know, only with his dad's supervision. But he thinks by the end of the summer, he'll be able to just go out on his own.
And they should form their own team.
Yeah.
What do you think this team would be called?
It depends on who names it. If Mike names it, it's going to be something stupid.
All right. Bear with me. What if Mike and Jakeem form Young Justice?
Whoa.
Huh?
That would be kind of cool.
Yeah. That is a name that I feel like Mike would come up with.
Yeah.
Because they're the Young Justice Society. I mean, they're a year younger than the rest of the Justice Society. But still, Young Justice.
Yeah.
I don't think that will be it. I just thought that was a fun thought. I was thinking about, like, because it wouldn't be like Teen Titans.
No.
You know, I was thinking of names from the comics or Infinity Incorporated.
Right. I was thinking about Infinity Inc. if that was going to be, because they haven't used that at all, but that's kind of where...
That's where a lot of these characters come from, yeah.
Yeah.
That's where Beth and Yolanda and Jenny and Todd, if we ever finally meet him, all come from mm-hmm. Infinity Inc.
I love Mike's line that he's like, okay, we'll just wish that the Thunderbolt will deliver the papers and we'll go discuss this plan over donuts like adults.
Hey, I'm an adult and I love donuts.
Oh, yeah.
Did I tell my Owen Wilson story on the podcast? Or did that happen? No, that was just last weekend. We haven't done
the
podcast.
No, I think you told me, but you didn't tell it on the podcast.
So I was at a donut shop here in Atlanta, my favorite donut shop. And Owen Wilson, Luke's brother, of course, was behind me in line. And I didn't know because he was wearing a hat and he had a mask on because he's a responsible adult. And he was wearing a mask in public like all responsible adults do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're mad at me for saying that, I don't care. On record. So anyway, we get our donuts and I hold the door open for him as he's leaving. And then someone was like, yeah, so that was Owen Wilson. And I was like, oh, man, I don't know how I didn't recognize his voice. Who cares? It's just like a celebrity sighting in a donut shop. But then we got home and my wife was like, were you wearing your variant jacket when we were at the donut shop? And I was like, oh, my God, I was. So Owen Wilson behind me in line, while I have variant written across my back in big orange letters, is probably like, oh, God, I don't want to deal with this. So he snuck out without having to have a fan interaction, which, I mean, he's probably fine with. If he's half as nice as Luke, he would be fine with.
Yeah.
But still, where are we?
Cameron.
Cameron is done with his mural. So he decides to show up for this episode.
Yeah, I've been missing him.
Mural looks good. And then Sophus tells him it's time that he learned the truth about his family.
Mm-hmm.
And then he and Lily both ice up.
Yeah.
So let's ask this question. If they're married and they both have the family ice powers, are they cousins or...
Or maybe they like invented these powers or something together?
Or maybe they are the unification of two ice-powered lineages.
Oh, yeah.
Which would make Jordan the first of like double ice-powered people.
Which would explain why he's so powerful.
But my first thought was, hold on. Are they related to each other by blood?
That didn't cross my mind. My thought was, hey, do you guys know you're just out in public? Like, maybe this is more of a private conversation.
They didn't fully ice up. They just did the eyes and the breath thing.
Yeah.
But also, if they are from two lineages that have married to join their ice powers, maybe, you know, that's the extent of their ice powers is like they can still ice people, but they don't go total ice the way Jordan did.
Yeah.
Perhaps we'll learn that in the future.
Oh, yeah. I think we're going to learn a lot about Cameron and Icicle Jr. next season.
I'm really excited that I don't know.
And then yet again, Yolanda is leaving church this season and runs into Cindy outside because Cindy needs to admit that she was wrong, that you did not need to embrace your dark side in order to defeat Eclipso. And she knows that she needs to get Yolanda on board if she can ever convince Courtney, because Cindy wants to join the JSA.
All right, here's a little story. Way back in March when I got the script for this episode, I read that line. It said, Cindy, I want to join the JSA. And I squealed like a pig. And then I screen capped it and I sent it to Meg. And I was like, this is my favorite line of anything I've ever read. Just Cindy Berman saying, I want to join the JSA, excited me so much. I flipped out.
I am super excited for where this goes.
And, you know, it's so good because her and Courtney did like move so seamlessly together as a team when fighting Eclipso.
Yeah, they really did.
It was fantastic. Can we just throw props out to the stunt team once again? Walter Garcia, the stunt coordinator, Paul O'Connor, the assistant stunt coordinator, and the whole stunts team. I can't name all of the stunt performers, so let's not throw any of them out there. But those two guys and their whole team are fantastic.
They killed it this episode, all season. But yeah, this one looked awesome. And so we don't get Yolanda's answer there. We go over to see Rick is burying Grundy. And that must have taken forever to dig that hole.
Without an hourglass.
Yeah.
That's just like pure 17-year-old dude muscle. No extra help.
And then once he's done, the Shade shows up. So I wonder if the Shade was planning on coming sooner. And then he was like, I don't want to get roped into helping. And so he just conveniently pops up, you know, when he's done and saying, yo, we'll stop rooting because Grundy has this way of coming back. He just needs to be buried at the right place at the right time.
Which was not a surprise to anyone who's familiar with Grundy from the comics.
Uh-huh.
But there you go, guys. He'll be back.
Yeah. And Rick's like, well, you're going to tell me before you leave, you know, how to do that. And Shade's like, oh, well, I'm not leaving.
And how good news is that?
Mm-hmm. I'm very excited.
More shade in season three.
And then I guess there was one good thing that came out of Eclipso, because he kind of showed Beth's parents, you know, there is, I'm sure, a little bit of truth in what Beth in the Shadowlands was yelling at her, or yelling at her parents. But, you know, obviously it wasn't her, but it was enough that they are, you know, rekindling their relationship. And then also becoming very much interested in Beth's life, whether or not Beth wants that or not.
Yeah, I don't think that the Shadow Realms thing played as big a role in their reconciliation. I think it was really just like the pure adrenaline of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the danger, you know, like almost dying and all of that just rekindled. There is a little Easter egg in this scene when they talk about a new costume.
Uh-huh.
And the mom comes up with like red and black. That's because Beth Chappell's Dr. Midnight in the comics had a gaudy red and black outfit. Or not red and black, yellow and black, excuse me.
I thought that that might have been what it was
when they mentioned it. Big moon across the whole torso, not the chest, just like the whole torso. Big yellow moon on black.
Nice.
Oh, one thing, when Chuck is getting ready to leave, you know, she says, what if the world needs Dr. Midnight? And he says they have one, and he hands her a duffel bag.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, was the duffel bag just the Dr. Midnight costume? Or did it have other Dr. Midnight accoutrement? Like in the comics, he has blackout bombs because he can see in the dark. He throws blackout bombs so that everyone else is blind and he's the only one that can see. It would be nice if Beth got access to that moving forward.
Yeah, it seems kind of strange because she already had a costume. So why would he just hand her that bag? So I think you're right. I think there's something more in there. In the way that Sylvester is like, he's going to show Courtney that there's more to the staff. This is going to elevate Beth leveling as well. Up. Yeah.
Everybody's leveling up.
We kind of wrap it up at Courtney's house. You know, we learn that Sylvester is going to be staying in the basement. Jenny's left. She's in Milwaukee. And things are back to normal. And then at the door are the Crocs. They're new neighbors carrying over blueberry muffins.
I mean, what can I say? I love it.
I was so happy.
Oh, and then we cut to Frenemies coming in 2022.
That was amazing. I'm so excited for next season.
Yeah, I'm really, really glad that that stayed because that was in the script. Just great that there's that. And then still a scene after that.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about this scene, dude. So excited.
Over at the Helix Institute, Nurse Love is telling someone about Blue Valley, that heroes and villains are living side by side.
We also get another piece of information here that we did not have before. And that is that she knows that Jenny and Todd are Green Lantern's kids.
Oh, okay.
She said Green Lantern's daughter came back looking for her brother. When we were at the Helix Institute before, there was no mention of Green Lantern.
Okay.
We know that they had Todd, and they may have known that Todd had powers, but I had no indication that she knew what Todd's parentage was.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big reveal, and that she's found others like her, a town of heroes and villains living side by side, which, you know, it was just established 12 seconds before.
Uh-huh.
But from the first mention of Mr. Bones, way back when we were at the Helix Institute before, I was like very excited to see what he looked like. Because I had a feeling it wouldn't be as straightforward as like just a skull floating above some clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And what they came up with was incredible.
Oh, yeah.
He looked so good.
So good. So creepy.
Yeah, just like almost invisible skin. Not completely invisible.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly opaque. Just very slightly. You could see everything. I thought it looked amazing. And the surprise of it being voiced by Keith David, the damn legend, Keith David. I love that guy. And I flipped out when I heard his voice, and I loved it.
Yeah, I hope that he keeps that character or keeps that role in the third season. because he ends us saying perhaps we should take a trip to Nebraska. So I'm thinking the Helix Institute and Mr. Bones are going to be the big bad.
And that's not just the episode, but the season. So we're going to have a chat with a young Eclipso, Milo Stein, and his parents joined us as well. But before we get to that, I think it's time for our final giveaway of the season.
What do you think we should give away today?
I have 5x7 Justice Society photos framed. The exact photo that Courtney finds amongst Pat's things in the pilot. Yeah, with the stains and the rips, all of it. So I think people will be excited about this and they can get their hands on it if they tweet at us at StargirlPod with the hashtag JSA Roundtable. That's hashtag JSA Roundtable at StargirlPod.
And how many are there to give away?
I think I have 20.
All right. So the first 20 people to comment with that hashtag and tweet at us.
But also keep your DMs open, people, because, you know, I need to get your addresses from you to mail them. Mm-hmm. So you guys are going to get that. So fun and exciting. Sarah, I sent you one, right?
You did. It looks amazing.
So there you have it from Sarah. It's amazing. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you're going to hear from Milo Stein in his first ever interview. Talk about an exclusive.
So exciting.
It's the most exclusive interview we've ever had. Milo Henry in his first ever interview with us on this show. Stick around.
Stargirl After Show.
Hey there, I'm Rachel.
I'm Tristan.
We're the hosts of The Nooniverse on the Fandom Limb Network. Our podcast dives into everything related to the Asian entertainment scene. Whether it's K-pop, K-dramas, boys love, our universe covers it all. We post every other Tuesday morning to dish about what we're watching, who we love, and why you should too. You can listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're interested in listening to real conversations about the Asian entertainment wave that doesn't get enough love, then you'll love The Nooniverse.
Stargirl After Show.
All right, so we're very excited to be here with the real big bad of the show, Eclipso slash young Bruce Gordon himself, Milo Stein. Milo, thanks for being here with us, dude.
Thank you for having me here.
I gotta say, you were like the breakout star this season. I was so impressed by you in every scene. I was so happy that you were cast.
Thank you. I love being evil.
You know, the first interview we did on the show was with the director, Andy. And she had so many good things to say about you. And literally every time you come up in conversation, everybody just is blown away by how awesome you were as Eclipso slash Bruce. I don't know, how do you think of it? Do you think of it as Eclipso or Bruce?
I would say I think of it more as Bruce just because I feel like they act very differently. And even though they're the same person, they have different, still different ways of getting to people.
Yeah. So, okay, we'll refer to it as Bruce.
Yeah.
But yeah, everybody has across the board just been very impressed by you. And I sort of teased that you were going to be on the podcast and people on Twitter and stuff were like, oh my God, is it who I think it is? Because everyone's very excited to hear from you. Just so you know, you're kind of a big deal. Don't let it get to your head though. Okay.
Okay.
How did you go about getting the role of young Bruce?
I got the audition, I think in October. Like last year, and it was said it was only going to be one episode, and might be recurring. So I got the part, and then me and my dad did this, like, we went to Georgia, just us, and to film the first scene, or not the first scene, to film the episode one, the parts where I am in.
But it was the first scene too.
Yeah, it was the first scene. And then we went back and they notified us that we're going to be in episode 6 to episode 9 too. So three more episodes. So at that point, we all went there because it was going to be a little longer than just the one episode. And I think after that, they decided that I was going to be in 13 and in 12 and the rest of the episodes. And that was just a really cool experience. I've never been on a TV show where they like keep bringing more episodes into the mix. And that was really cool.
You know, I don't have confirmation, but I really think that it was just because they saw what a great job you were doing and they were like, yeah, let's just do more of him.
I don't know. Maybe. Also, I have very good advice on what snacks they should add to the snack bar. So that could be why, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Crafty is very important. We got to keep on top of those guys.
Yeah.
And they don't get the credit they deserve either because...
Yeah, they should. Yeah.
Crafty is my favorite part of set for sure. I don't work like on the set. Usually I work in the offices, but I will walk out to the stages just to hit up Crafty like 8 times a day.
Yeah. The pancakes, when they, in the morning, the breakfast pancakes, those, no offense to my mom, but those are my favorite like breakfast food in the world.
Nice.
And they're just so good.
Yeah. They always get good caterers. So you were just going to be in this one episode, and honestly, it's been so long since I read the scripts. I don't remember which scenes young Bruce got added to or how many scripts he was in initially. And, you know, they may have added it before I got those scripts because we don't get them all at once. But the more you showed up in this thing, the more impressed I was, honestly. And I think everyone agrees. And I want to know, did you take acting classes, or is it just because your dad's a director that he helped you?
Well, I think it was sort of a mix of both. I took like a couple acting classes. I took a comedy class too at, what was it called?
Second City.
I took a couple.
Wow.
Yeah. But then I did like an acting class with one of my friends. But that was while I was doing plays, because I was doing like I've been doing a lot of plays at Yada before I even started doing auditions. I think it was 21 plays that I stopped. And wow. I told one of the teachers at Yada, I'm going to do some real acting. And now I realize that might have hurt their feelings a little bit, but. I decided to ask my dad if I could start like doing auditions and get a manager in it, or an agent. And the first person we went to, or my parents were like, are you sure you really want it? It's a lot of work. And I was like, let me think about it. And like, and then I decided I really want to do it. And I decided that it would be much cooler than not doing it. So then I started acting. The first time I tried to get a manager, I didn't think it worked out. So then the next time I went to this really cool like building, and I think right away I met the manager and I was like, yes, I love her. She's super cool. And her name's Taylor. And she's my manager now. And like, and it was just, that's sort of how my acting started.
That's a great story. You've been in a few things before, but Stargirl's like your big thing now. Did you watch Stargirl before you got the role?
Well, no, I'm more of a movie guy. Once Disney Plus came out, I was just kind of binging everything on there. But then right when I got the part, I was like, I want to see this show. And before I even knew, I just thought I was going to be one part in one episode. And I started watching it. And now me and my mom are like, we watched every single episode. And me and my friends are watching every episode in the second season. And we love the show.
It's really great, right?
Yeah, it's really good.
I mean, when I worked on the show initially, I thought it was going to be super great. and I was not prepared for how good it actually ended up being, even though I had super high expectations.
Yeah.
It's really lucky when you get a role that is on something that turns out to be great.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure a lot of people get jobs that they're really excited about, and then the movie or the show ends up not being great.
Yeah, even when it's like a really good actor. They're on something.
Everybody has something that they're not super proud that they were in. But, you know, you got Stargirl, so you're like on top there.
Yeah, Stargirl is one of them that I'm going to remember for like my whole life.
Did you always want to play a supervillain, or do you have like a dream superhero role that you would want to play?
Well, the first thing I was in, I was sort of like this sort of medium character that got soda at a soda fountain and took forever and made the main character upset and angry, which got cut out, by the way. And then second thing I was in is old man. But once I got the part of Stargirl, I was like, I feel like I like villains more, like the aspect of villains more than superheroes. So now I'm kind of aiming to get more villains because I don't know. I feel like you can, I just like being a villain.
It's definitely something that you can like have a lot of fun playing it.
Yeah.
I mean, being a good guy, you can do that in real life.
Yeah. But being a villain is more like acting, and I love just, I don't know. I love being evil in fake. Like I don't get to be evil in real life. So if you get to be in a show, it's really cool.
That is cool. Did you have to practice your laugh a lot?
Yeah. Whenever I hear my laugh on the show, everyone says it's creepy, but I'm just like, ooh, I don't know. Because my laugh to me sounds like my laugh, and it doesn't sound anything special about it, but my creepy laugh, that I had to practice.
Yeah.
And laughing is actually always the hardest part for me. Like, and I did it a lot in the show, but like laughing on command, or like even creepy laughing on command, was always super hard for me.
I think you nailed it.
Yeah. It's such an unconscious thing. You know, we don't have control over when we laugh. So, like, having to do it on cue is difficult, yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, you did it, and it did sound creepy.
Well, thank you.
You know, I think the atmosphere helps a little bit.
Yeah. One of the directors, Andy, she and me figured out this thing, Scary Bruce or Nice Bruce. And every take, we talked about, I asked her, should I do Scary Bruce for this one or Nice Bruce for this one? And Nice Bruce is more like sort of like happy creepy. And Scary Bruce is like the classic supervillain voice. I think we mostly did Nice Bruce, but some scenes we did Scary Bruce.
Yeah, I think it works really well when you're just genuinely being happy, but then you've got like the creepy music and the creepy situation. That's what makes it creepy.
Yeah.
Andy's super fantastic, and she told me about how she played the nice and scary Bruce with you.
It was really a fun part. I think we added some other Bruces, but they were like very small, like confused Bruce and angry Bruce, I think. But we didn't use those two very much.
Now I want to talk about the problematic scenes where you had to say some pretty awful stuff to Angelica. And I understand that Angelica sort of helped you through that. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, Angelica told me that it's better to do it than to not do it, because it shows that if you're actually doing this in real life, you're sort of like an evil death god demon. And it's better to sort of say those things to make people realize what they're doing is wrong.
When I watched the episode, my first thought was, you know, in regards to how that must have been difficult for you to say things that you knew were super hurtful. It's different when you're an adult and, you know, I'm sure as a young man, you have more concern about hurting someone's feelings in that way.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of that stuff happen in real life, but I know it happens and I know it's really horrible. So I feel like thinking of it as showing people that an evil monster demon doing that kind of stuff might make people not do it.
Yeah, nobody wants to be the evil monster demon, obviously.
Yeah. So,
did you have any scene that stood out as like your favorite thing to shoot?
Yes, I think it was in episode 13, the action scene at the end where Stargirl was blasting her staff at me and I moved out of the way and like the glass shattered. And it was just, I was sitting in my chair when that happened, but I got to see like it explode. And I watched it and I was like, whoa, I disappeared. That's cool. And yeah, it was my first action scene. So I really enjoyed that.
Very nice. Now, I know you recently binged like all the Marvel movies, right?
Yeah. For my birthday on August 6th, we watched every single Marvel movie. For me, the second time. For my dad, the second time. But for my mom and my brother, the first time. And on my birthday, we watched Endgame.
Very nice. So you got to like actually be part of special effects like what you were seeing in those Marvel movies.
Yeah, it's really cool to see like your favorite actor or your favorite superhero like flying and like then teleporting and then watching the show you're in and you're teleporting, and it's just really cool.
Do you have a favorite superhero?
I think it's either Iron Man, the Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man, or Peter Quill. I like the humor from both of those.
Good choices.
Yeah, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is unbeatable.
Yeah.
I've always said so.
Do you read comics as well?
Not as much as I watch movies, but I love reading. I'm on the second to last book of this book series called Keepers of the Lost Cities.
I just started that series.
I love it so much. It's super good. Yeah, I recommend it to everybody if you like fantasy.
Nice. I'll have to check those out. So I would like to ask a question of your parents because they are here also.
Hello.
Hi.
Whoever wants to weigh in. Having Milo as a young actor, I think that we all know what the stereotypes are about child actors. I was wondering what you guys do to sort of keep him grounded and not grounded. You're not in trouble, but to keep him grounded and not walking the path of the Gary Colemans and such like out there.
I think we think of it as another like fun activity in his life rather than something that takes over his life or becomes his life. You know, he's in school, he's doing soccer, he takes guitar lessons, and he does acting. So it's sort of like we think of it as a part of, you know, his hobby collection. Obviously, he loves reading books and doing other stuff too. And I think, you know, when we're on set, the Stargirl experience came at absolute wonderful, perfect time for our family and really turned around our whole life within the pandemic. Because before Stargirl happened, I think Milo was pretty sad about the quarantine and everything that was going on. He'd been taken out of school and he'd been out of school for 6 months or 8 months and was really kind of bummed about it. You know, he's a very social guy. He loves hanging out with his friends, and now all of a sudden he couldn't do any of that, and he was doing Zoom school at home. And then when the Stargirl opportunity came up and we got to go to Atlanta and then, you know, be around other people and be, you know, making new friends, it really turned things around for him emotionally. It was really just a blessing for us. So it was such a great experience in that way, and I think really turned around your year, didn't it?
Yeah, made it a lot.
Yeah, it was something that was kind of special that happened for us during the pandemic, for our whole family. So in that sense, it was just a really positive experience. And then in terms of keeping him grounded overall, I mean, I think we just, you know, don't, in terms of the money piece of it, you know, we just, I think a lot of that can mess up a lot of families. But for Milo, we just put away his money for his future and really don't think too much about it. What do you think, Dina?
For me, one of the things is how we focus on who we all want to be as people. So it's the parts that we got the most excited about as parents about Milo on set were the things that people were saying about him for his character, not his character of Bruce, but his character as Milo. That was what we would talk about and be excited about when the COVID testing people or the hair and makeup or the sound guys or everyone would say kind words about how Milo was on set different from how they expected a kid actor to be. That was always something that really felt good for our family and something we would promote a lot and get excited about.
Yeah, I think you're the youngest actor that's been on Stargirl so far. And you know, after working with you, Andy got a new dog and she named her dog Milo.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's super cool. Doesn't turn evil.
Now, here's one thing that I really want to ask you about, because it's a big part of being on the set at Stargirl, and that's seeing Stripe for the first time.
Oh, yeah. The first time I saw it, I thought it was like sort of like one of those 3D paintings, because I saw it from a window. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I think it was either Andy or Greg who showed me.
Greg Beeman?
Like, yeah. Who showed me the inside the warehouse. And I was like, whoa. I thought it was just like a painting. And it was just so cool to see it up close.
Because it's way bigger than you think it's going to be, right?
Yeah. It's ginormous.
Like, no matter how big you think it is watching the show, when you see it in person, you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's really everyone's reaction. And when I was allowed to work on set, because I had to work from home for season two because of COVID. But for season one, I would go visit Stripe every day just so I could be like, oh, magic.
Yeah.
So what is what's next for Milo Stein in the acting world?
Well, I'm still doing auditions. But my favorite type of auditions are actually going in person, which aren't happening a lot nowadays. So I'm gonna power through it, keep doing auditions until everything goes back to normal.
Nice. And what's next for Milo Stein? Not in acting. Are you back in-person school yet?
Yeah, I'm back in-person school. Everyone's being very safe though. Like, especially my friend, me and Nara are like eating lunch away from everyone else, sort of. Our teacher is letting us be sort of secluded from everyone else when we take our mask off. It's really cool. Everyone's like,
fair enough.
Comfortable for them.
Now, that's good. Is anyone newly scared of you?
So I have my friends, I really want to see their reactions to episode 13. And all the episodes, they've been like sort of joking, like sort of like obeying my every command so I don't smite them. And it's just really fun too. Like, do all that. Another thing I have to, a question you asked later, I think, to my parents, but I have an answer to it. I like to think that I'm not like the most important person on set, which I'm not. I like to like talk to different people and ask what they do. And during episode 13, whenever there was a break, I asked Greg Beeman about the camera, and he started, one of my favorite parts about set was he started telling me like he called it teaching me film school in a day. And it was just, he started like telling me everything about it. And it was so cool and awesome to see how other people do their job.
Oh yeah. It's really cool. And you know, Greg Beeman has been around like forever. I'm not calling him old, but you know, he worked on all of Smallville, which I don't know if you've seen that, but
I haven't seen it.
It ran for a long time, and it's a very beloved show. That guy's got the credentials behind him.
Now, do you have any other creative projects that you do besides acting? Like, do you do any RPGs or anything?
I love D&D. I love Dungeons and Dragons.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Yeah. I love like creating characters. And now, ever since I got the Calypso part or John Bruce part, I'm starting to want to be like sort of neutral evil or neutral. Mm-hmm. Which that means for people that don't know D&D, it means that you don't really follow rules and you're evil. And it's just cool to like express myself in an imaginary game with dice and paper.
So what's your main character that you like to play?
Well, before I got the card, I usually played this dwarf barbarian, or in some versions of D&D, a goblin thief who loves gold no matter what and is just that will do anything for gold. And then nowadays, I've been creating a character which is like a warlock half elf. And
that's fun.
Yeah, but his goal is to. He has a different goal than his teammates.
Is it a different secret goal?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Very nice. Okay, I have one more question, and it's the most important question. This isn't coming out till Tuesday, but we're talking to you on Halloween. So, what's your costume, dude?
Okay. My costume is sort of a mix of... everyone wanted me to be Calypso, Young
Bruce. Of course.
So I decided I'm going to do a Reaper costume with a head thing and then two red glowing eyes. But then you can pull open the mask and it's just going to be me smiling there. That's the
Reaper. Nice.
Very cool.
It would have been cool instead of doing Young Bruce Calypso to do like full on Calypso.
Yeah, we couldn't find them. We couldn't find like all the cool stuff he has, but... I think that is an option if this costume doesn't.
You know, just some purple paint on your face.
Maybe we could do that under the Reaper. Like, we pull it out, and the Reaper is a Calypso.
Maybe if we were in Atlanta and we could get help from the makeup department.
I do have this thing that we got ready and thought about. We have a couple funny stories from set. Or funny stories about some actors, if you guys
want. Yeah, hit us.
Absolutely.
So one of them is from Luke, who plays Pat. Whenever I went to the makeup area, I just got a new mask that had my name on it, different fonts sometimes, and it's really cool. And then I got there, because I got there the earliest, basically always, when we were filming episode 13. In the final fight scene, Cindy, Stargirl, Beth, and Pat were all there. And we did this thing. I got there first, and usually Pat got there second, or Luke got there second. And we created this thing where I got 8 Oreos. Whoever gets in there first gets 8 Oreos, whoever gets there second gets 6 Oreos. And whoever gets there third gets 3, fourth 2, fifth 1, and sixth has to get everyone Oreos. And then the rest of the day, me and Luke were tracking how many Oreos we had. And it was like a tight battle, to see who would get the most Oreos. And at the end of the day, we actually tied. So we both decided that we would share the Oreos.
Very nice.
How many did you end up eating?
I think we kind of like forgot about it a little because
okay.
We either of us wanted to eat like 43 Oreos.
Yeah.
So I had like three, or I had like, I don't know, but I had 11 of them.
You just had a whole stash of Oreos for emergencies.
Yeah. Another funny story is with Rick and Breck. I think it was the prison scene when we went into the Shadow Realms, Shadowlands, and I was showing Breck prison cell where Cameron's at, and in between takes, we started this band called The Boys in Breck, where I was sitting on the toilet in the shot, and I was banging on like the toilet, and Rick had a book, I think it was like a Bible, a prop, and he was like banging it against the wall. And whenever Rick came in, and it was the next take, she was like tapping on the. She had I forgot, but she had something that made it clang, made the bars clang. So in between takes, we were all like dancing around and creating a song. So next time, if you watch it over, in between takes, we were all dancing around and banging on things.
Nice. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was.
All of those guys are really fun people. I imagine you had just the best time the whole time you were there.
I think it was one of the best parts of the year. Other than them announcing COVID vaccines for 5 and up soon. But it was one of the best times of the year.
You know, Breck was only a couple years older than you when she first got her first role on The Goldbergs. She was 13.
Oh yes! What? We've watched every single Goldberg episode because my dad directed Kim Possible the movie, and in it were two actors that were on the show Goldbergs. What part did she play?
So Breck is in the first episode of The Goldbergs, where Adam's grandpa takes him to the diner, and he's got a crush on the waitress. That waitress is Breck. And then we don't see her again. She comes back for one episode in like season 4 or something.
I remember that.
And
oh my God.
I started watching The Goldbergs while I was working on season 1 of Stargirl. And she came up and I was like, wait, why does she look so familiar? Oh my God, that's Breck. Yeah. It was very weird.
I remember that.
I honestly think that you are going to go as far as you want to go in this business. I think you're very talented. And you're also adorable and people just eat that up.
Thank you.
So yeah, I can't wait to see what projects you're going to come up with next.
I'll put that on my resume. Talented and adorable.
I mean, it's true. So thank you so much, Milo and Adam and Dina, for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
This was so much fun. Thank you.
We're so happy that we could be your first interview. I don't know. I was in the middle of the night one night. I was trying to think of, I couldn't sleep, you know? I was trying to think of who we should have for our last guest of this season. And it just occurred to me, like, the real bad guy. I mean, no shade to Nick Terabay. He did great as Eclipso. But I really feel like the most evil was coming out of you.
Wow.
And so we just had to have you.
Thank you.
So now my sincerest wish for you is that you go out, have a blast for Halloween, and eat yourself into a candy coma.
Yeah, I will. I have this trick with Halloween candy where you eat it while you're walking, and then anything else you have, you just hide it.
Uh-oh.
But
you just gave the game away with your parents there.
Well, if there's any kids listening, do that. And don't wait for them. Because it's a very good strategy.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, guys. I'm very sad that Eclipso has been turned into toast so that we won't see you in season 3 unless we have some cool flashbacks or something, maybe. I don't know. But our fondest wishes for you in the future, and we will be watching with interest.
Thank you so much for letting us on this.
Have a great Halloween.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 Stargirl After Show.
So that's another season. We will have, as news arises, you know, when a season three release date is announced, or when it's announced that the show's picked up for additional seasons, fingers crossed. Any big news items like that, we'll try to do an episode just to let you know. But even before that, in a couple of weeks, we're going to have a sit down with Sarah and I and all four core members of the Justice Society. Breck Bassinger will be here. Cameron Gelman will be here. Angelica Washington will be here. And Yvette Monreal will be here in the studio with me. They will be I have to buy an additional mic to do this because I only have four in here, but they're going to be here in studio with me. They're going to talk about season two. It's going to be a lot of fun. We don't have it scheduled just yet, so don't hold us to a strict time frame, but it'll be soonish. So make sure you're subscribed so you see that when it comes up in your podcast app.
Go ahead and go over to merch.stargirlaftershow.com and check out all the awesome design shirts that Sean made.
I'm so glad you're here because I'm really bad at promoting us, apparently. Everybody, be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review if you like. Or if you don't like, I'm forcing you. Do it. Also, if you like this podcast, we have an entire podcast network called Fandom Limb Media, which you can find at fandomlimb.com. It's this podcast, Sarah's other podcast, What's New Nancy Drew, which is releasing episodes right now. Yes.
Yeah.
So go watch Nancy Drew and then immediately ish go get What's New Nancy Drew afterwards. I have another podcast called Table Reads, and we have 15 other podcasts in addition to those for your listening pleasure. So fandomlimb.com, check that out. Don't forget to claim your JSA photo, and we will see you for our recap shortly. Until then, have a super great day.
Stargirl After Show is a production of Fandom Limb Media.